This interview with Ben Cook was recorded on November 6, 2021, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
Ben, we thank you so much for being with us today. It's really a pleasure, and we just want you to feel at home here. We're nothing formal. We're almost like family sitting in the living room, just having a chat. So Ben, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, please? Let's just kind of like start chronologically from back in the day. Did you grow up in Baltimore, and what was it like growing up?
Born at Church Home Hospital, East Baltimore, almost my entire life, my entire 47 years almost. Father of five. Mentor. Extreme runner.
So as a youngster growing up, you said you grew up on the east side.
Yes.
How was it, man? Did you grow up tough, and did you caught up or what?
Yeah, I got caught up young. My mother and father were in the military, so it was like, for a portion of my life, my grandmother had raised us. Well, both of my grandmothers. And I say about the age of about, I guess I would say about 8 or 9, I start like noticing like the presence of my parents really not being around, you know, because of their work schedules, you know, and like I say, and coming out of the military. So we bought a house off of Kirk Avenue, my mom's and pops. And Northeast Baltimore became our home. And
I think I know Kirk Avenue, right where the Cecil Kirk Rec Center is?
No, up some. You ever heard of Miss Doris Johnson?
I think I have, when I was doing news way back.
Yeah.
Miss Doris Johnson. The name sounds real familiar.
Oh man, she did a lot for our community. That's crazy. I was just talking about her earlier. She was like one of the most influential people in our neighborhoods at one time.
You know, so how were you connected with her?
Oh man, she started the Chum Association. She lived two blocks away from me in the 1700 block of Carswell. The medical center that sits on Abiston and Kirk Avenue, it's the Doris Johnson Medical Center, was named after her. Mm-hmm. She worked for, she worked for Schaefer, real good friends with Kirk Smoke. She was very influential in the community, you know.
Okay. And,
like I say, I just stepped out early, you know.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Like I say, my father was in my life, but his presence wasn't, you know. So I hung out with a lot of friends, you know. Moms work late. Just try to stay out as much as I can until she got home, you know. And as time went on, I got curious, you know. Like I say, my mother and father were in the military. They never really told me anything about the military or nothing. So I got curious on my own, you know, and start researching stuff, looking at certain stuff. And I had an outlook on life that was totally wrong, and no one ever told me that it was wrong, you know, because I never let anyone know the outlook that I had on life, you know.
And what outlook was that?
Violence. I mean, everything that I looked at as a kid, I looked at it violently. Like I say, by my mother and father being in the military, I just thought the military, everything military was violent, you know. I wasn't aware of all right, the humanitarian work that the military do. They pay for people to go to college. I never knew things like that, you know. Only thing I ever knew about military, like I say, from reading, was hurt. And that's the path that I went on early. And I mean,
you probably didn't even realize that your mind was being nurtured that way, did you? You're just kind of like living life, and all of a sudden, you start realizing I got violent ways. Does it work that way?
It started with, like, I raised dogs a lot, you know, coming up and the abuse that I put them through, you know, as I sit back and I look, you know, it started then, you know.
How, Ben? These are like delicate little animals, but what, you were like a little too aggressive with them?
A lot aggressive. I mean, at multiple times coming up in my life, I probably had nothing less than like 6 or 7 dogs in my care. So I would, one of them might do something I don't want. I might choke them bodily, beat them, you know, or something like that. Just thinking that it was okay. But not knowing that if I was to nurture the dog, treat the dog as such as I would like to be treated, the dog would have done anything that I wanted. I mean, I learned it eventually as time went on. But like I say, everything in my mind was always violent, violent.
So Ben, let's start getting to the meat now. That was kind of like the root of what you said of, you know, the symptoms of, you know, growing up with this violence on your mind. How did that lead to you going to into the system, into the prison system?
My first encounter, I'm not exactly sure of the dates and times, but I know I was still in elementary school. And I remember the incident very well, very well. Me and a friend, his father had owned a handgun back then. And his father was an immigrant, you know, from, Haiti. They're Haitian. Yeah, they're Haitian. So his father did a lot of body and fender work out of a garage, his garage on the side of their house. So me, I asked him one day, "You ever see your father with a gun?" He told me yes. So I said, "You think you can get it?" He tells me it's a lock on it. I say, "I'm good at picking locks. Bring it to school tomorrow and we'll try to pick it." Brought the gun to school. I took the gun from him. So at that point, I left school early, and it's a hill that sits behind City College on Lock Raven. I sat in their parking lot and waited till about 3:15 when all the mail trucks were returned to the post office down on Fillmore Street. As they came by, I threw rocks and busted every window of every mail truck that came down Lock Raven Boulevard towards Gorsuch Avenue that day, from probably about 3:15 to probably about 3:30, when they really figured out what was going on. They dispatched the police to me. The police came the back way, walked down the high school field, and came and caught me. I'll never forget. They say they've been looking for me for 2 days because they heard about somebody been throwing rocks. But that was my first real encounter. I was young. I was tall. So they thought I was lying about my age. I'm trying to tell them I'm in elementary school. They still put me in handcuffs, called my moms.
Man, what was that like when they called moms? Were you scared?
It wasn't even really the point of me being scared. At that point, I mean, as a mother, my mom had done all she could do to try to raise me to be a man. Like I say, because her and my father had probably separated by then, but it was just like, you know, back then, the whoopings, none of it really, it didn't matter, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just like, whatever the consequences were, I was with them. It really didn't matter. You know, like I say, my outlook on life was totally different than everybody else at that time.
So what led to going before a judge and getting sentenced?
Oh, man.
Was it one specific incident?
The first specific incident? Oh, man. I was a passenger in a car with a few of my friends and never questioned them or anything about the car, none that day. Come to find out that the car was carjacked from somebody before carjacking was a thing. So we're riding around in a car for a while that day, and I was fully engulfed in the streets by then. And I remember this incident because this was my life-changing moment. I was in possession of a Mac 11, fully automatic machine gun. And by then, I was driving the car myself. And one guy was in there with me. A car got behind us, and that's what changed my life. It was a police not knowing. He had discharged his firearm one time. And when he discharged his firearm, I never knew it was the police or any who he was. So at that time, I discharged the firearm that I had.
Y'all shot at each other?
Yes.
While you're riding down the street?
Yes. I shot behind me, and he had shot at the car. He had shot the back window out of the car, and I had shot behind me. And Hood went up on his car. He had stopped, but he had given a description of the car to the Northeastern District. They pursued us. I got away, and my cohort, he had gotten locked up that night. Come to find out that he had told the police, you know, where I lived at, everything. So later on that morning, police had came to my house and arrested me. Five of us were arrested. Uh, 30 days, everybody went to court, and I was still incarcerated. I was told that I had the most serious charges. So only thing I could tell my lawyer was for everyone to take their own charge.
So y'all weren't doing anything right at the time of the chase, but you had a machine gun. Y'all had a shootout. I'm just making sure I hear you right. I had a shootout, and then you were the one charged the most out of everybody?
Yep. I mean, like I told them at the time, you know, I was pretty responsible for myself at that time. And I just told everybody, take your charges. But that day, thinking about that entire day that led up to that incident, it was, oh, man, it was an awful day because someone pulled a brandished up. A pistol out on us earlier that day. And we had went back in retaliation for them pulling that pistol out on us and shot up a neighborhood. Luckily, no one was shot that day. Coming to find out that people we were shooting at, some of the people were my family. And didn't even know it until I came home from the incarceration.
So let me hear you straight. There was a shoot up in the neighborhood, then later on that same day, the police chase and so forth, right?
Yeah.
Same day.
Yep.
Okay. So go ahead. I just want, as we go along, remember for me, Ben, that we are like in a learning situation. Mm-hmm. So when I interrupt you, I'm not trying to be rude.
Oh, no. I understand.
Showing our students how to make sure they get the story right and listen correctly. Right. Because this is deep stuff, and they have to make sure they hear it right in order for them to put the story out right.
Right.
So
right.
I'm only interrupting so that they can see a technique that we use in interviewing where, you know, you and I just talking. Mm-hmm. You know, if I just ask questions and you just answer questions, that would be boring.
Right.
But you and I are just talking, and we're getting to know each other, and we're getting to be comfortable, and this is just all part of the learning process. So.
Right.
I just want to apologize in advance that I'm not trying to be rude.
No, I understand totally. Trust me.
So, I know I'm backing up a little bit. How much time did you spend, and was it because of everything that you're explaining now?
For that charge, I was given life. But I was fortunate enough to give it back within 6 years. And I ended up with 20 years 5 years suspended sentence, 5 years probation.
What was the exact charge?
It's funny, and I laugh at the Baltimore City Police Department every year that the charge, before the charge was wiped out. The last time I looked on to look up the charge, they had downgraded the charge. But the actual charge I had when starting out, I had an actual attempted murder on the police officer. Yeah.
And got how much time?
Like I say, it was life.
Mm-hmm.
But then I went back to court, ended up giving the time back, and I ended up with a 20-year deal broken up with a 10-year suspended sentence, 5 years, and 5 years probation.
It sounds like you had the right person in your corner.
Yeah.
Persuade somebody to knock off all that time, because from life down to what you said is a big discount.
And the reason why, so, like I say, I've learned over the years, God does a lot of things for a lot of reasons, and they may seem funny at times, you know, because you will never understand. And then when you do and you realize it, you can't do nothing but laugh. But the officer never identified himself as a police officer. And that's what initially got me back in court.
Actually, you didn't know who was shooting at you.
Exactly.
Ben, I want to introduce, now this is going to catch one of my fellows by surprise. His name is Tyler. And Tyler just told us a few minutes ago how this whole course just interests him. So, Tyler O'Neill, there you are, I'm looking right at you. What would you like to ask Mr. Ben right now from what you've heard, Tyler? The floor is yours.
Yes.
Then Stephanie is next. I'm sorry.
First of all, good morning, sir.
Morning.
After like that whole experience, how did you like bounce back? Because like me personally, my biggest thing in life is I know things in life, you know, don't always work out. And I know sometimes in life you got to fall before you succeed. But like my thing in life is if I'm in a situation and if I'm justifiably doing something wrong, even though it's wrong, if I have every right to do it, like, okay, in this case, if somebody's shooting at me and if I shoot them back, two wrongs don't make a right. But like, my question is like, how did you bounce back from that? Because if that were me in that situation, I'm not even going to lie to you, nobody else, I would harp on it, but eventually I would get over it because like my biggest thing in life is I know things aren't fair, and I know that things like don't always work out for people, but it's just like, how did you bounce back from all of that?
Change is inevitable. Change is going to happen regardless if we want it or not, to us, to everybody, to the world. And I learned that later in life than early. If I'd have learned it early, I'd have had everything mapped out. But it took me a while. I'm a father of 5 children, all girls, between the ages of 28 and 19. That was my biggest motivation to come back out here and do right. At the time of my last incarceration, I had had 4 children. And it was just like, the gaps in their lives, you know. I seen it, and I had a plan before I came home. So being incarcerated, if you come home without a plan, 95% of the time you're going to fail and go back. Success comes from planning. Once you plan, you'll be able to execute it. And I always write down everything that I want. God always tell me, if you want something, write it down, make it tangible, make it easy to touch, easy to see. For me, God did everything for a reason. I wouldn't trade my life in for nothing because it made me into the person that I am today. But I mentor a group of kids in this city that are going through the exact same thing that I went through, the exact same thing that I wish I could have been turned around from. Change. I figured out what change was. That's what changed me.
That's a good point. And like, sometimes, like, you know, sometimes it takes something, I guess sometimes it takes something life-changing to happen to you for you to for something even better to happen. Me and my therapist was actually talking about that the other day. He said, if, like, look back on some of the bad things, if it wasn't for some of that, where would you be today?
Exactly. Listen, man, I've been incarcerated most of my adult life. I've been shot 12 times, 3 separate occasions. I was hit by a car. Oh, man. God had a reason for me to still be here. Like I say, my purpose, I figured out what it was, you know. It's to give back. It's to serve, you know. And I serve my community well right now. I'm talking about very well. If I was to go today or tomorrow, I could say that I did my job. I definitely did my job, you know, because once you go and you mess up the streets in life, the only thing you can do is get back. Get back to a point, not of giving too much of yourself, but giving back to a point of you seeing a change. Like I say, change is everything. It's going to happen. And that's my biggest thing. I'm change. It can happen for everybody. And I'm a living testimony to that. That's my biggest thing. Change, man. You can do it. We all can do it. Trust me. If I can do it, I tell everybody that. If I can change, anybody can change. Trust me.
Jakira had a question. Well, she had two questions, actually. she said, was it hard to rebuild those relationships with your children, family, and friends after prison? And are you still experiencing any issues with rebuilding those relationships? Ooh.
I go through it every week. I'm an excellent father, but I'm still repairing relationships from 28 years ago. You know, there was gaps there. It's gonna be miscommunication. You know, the communication wasn't there. You know, because I was always a third party. I'm on the phone. I can't actually see the kids, and now I got to do everything through their moms. So I'm the third party all the time. So, yeah, I go through it because it puts a lot of pressure on my youngest child because I didn't miss a beat in her life. And my older kids, they look at my youngest child like she got everything. Yeah, she has everything because I've learned now. Yeah, it's a lot. Trust me, it takes a lot. I do a lot of outings just to make sure I'm on track with my kids. Yeah, you have to mend those relationships. It's a lot. That's a lot.
You know, I apologize. I said Stephanie. We don't want to forget her. So let's do this. Let's set this standard, if you don't mind, Alicia. Just the way you came in a moment ago to facilitate the chat, why don't you go ahead and take that over? So I'll leave it up to you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Stephanie, I thought you answered your question. going back to Doris Johnson, she wanted to know, how was she influential to you in your life, not just in the community?
Ms. Johnson made sure everybody had always. And back in the 70s and the early 80s, that's when communities were community, you know? And I watched the relationships that she built with other community leaders, politicians, to make sure that our neighborhood always had. She was very influential because of the relationships that I build now. I build off of knowing what she's done. She's done a lot for our community.
She also said, how did you feel when you got a life sentence? how did you
feel? Alicia, can you speak up a little bit for me, please, dear?
Oh, I'm sorry. She said, how did you feel when you got a life sentence and when the sentence was cut down to 10 years?
It was like the worst day of my life. That was like the worst day of my life. I mean, try going on a job interview, being told that you're about to make $100,000 a week, and somebody just snatching it from under you. It was like that, you know. It was really devastating. I mean, and then when I got back in court, I mean, I knew what was capable of being done, but it was just like, it was a process, you know, and I just had to wait for the process to be over. I mean, I was just fortunate enough that I didn't spend an eternity trying to give the time back like a lot of people who I know, you know. Like I say, those things I seen later in life, didn't pay any attention to it then, but as time went on and I realized, like I say, God had a plan for me. I had 3 major incarcerations and it took a chunk out of my life.
Go ahead, Alicia.
Although there were no more questions, but I had a question.
Sure.
How are you still adjusting right now? Like, just from back in the day of that first incident to now?
Oh, man. It's been a ride. It's been a ride trying to cope. I mean, I can be open and honest with anybody right now in my life because of where I'm at in my life. I struggle with addiction, alcoholism, you know, and I know the person that I am. I battle with it. I fought it, you know. Addiction is a daily fight. And when you can say that you're at peace with your body and nothing being in it, it means a lot because, like I say, I watch kids out here daily on prescription drugs, on heroin, you know, and I was addicted to the pills as well. And I'm going on, I think, what, a few years clean, I can't remember. I don't even count anymore. But coping is a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot. To try to stay straight, knowing how easy it is to just go backwards and fall into the ways that we normally would do. I mean, it's very easy to fall backwards. I mean, just as quick as walking out your front door, someone calling your phone. It's hard, but I mean, I've definitely adjusted.
Yeah. Before we get Selena, if you don't mind, can we get Stephanie in? She's been so patient. I know she put something on chat a little bit earlier.
Yeah, that's the question I had asked for her.
Yeah. Oh, you asked that for Stephanie.
You got to my questions. Thank you, Ben, for answering them.
Well, no problem.
Do you have another question, Stephanie? And look, to everybody, before Stephanie speaks, I know you all are listening, and it's all kind of stuff going through your mind.
Right. Don't be afraid. Hey, trust me. I'm open. I'm honest. I have no collar. I don't wear collars, so you can ask.
This man wants you to ask questions because I feel Ben is probably therapeutic for you in some kind of way, right? Yes, that you're speaking with us.
Yes.
So you want us to ask you the good questions, right?
Because I get it out of you.
Come in a little bit for me, man, Greg, and tell him how helpful this could be for somebody like Ben, if you don't mind, just speaking their heart.
Well, clearly, the brother has made some amends just listening to what he said, and he has you know, resolve some issues about his life and about his relationships. And so just being able to what to give back. And so this is a part of this giving back, you know, because none of us are immune to making a wrong turn at the wrong time in the middle of the day and find ourselves in a situation that's life changing, you know. And so just to be able to ask questions and allow him to share some insights that clearly only he can share at this moment, right? From his perspective, is golden for him because it just reassures him and reinforces his commitment, you know, to stay on this path. So again, there's no dumb questions. There's no dumb questions, right? And so I'll just ask a question. I'll just ask one question, if I may. So in this journey, this prison experience, what was one of the saddest moments that you had to encounter while on this journey?
I lost every friend. I ever had while I was in prison, except my best friend. Lost all my friends to the streets. And I know God don't make no mistakes. And I say it every day, prison saved me, because every time I lost a friend, I was in prison. And I'm talking about dear friends of mine from almost birth. That was like one of the biggest hurtful moments, being incarcerated.
As Cook speaks, and I'm speaking to all the fellows now, we're learning how to listen. So right now, as we let silence and his heart flow, and he really digs deep to come out and bring these things out, I want you all to start forming questions and ask them. I'm seeing the chat board light up, so I'm liking that. So let's kind of dwell right now, as we've already talked about pre-prison, and we've already talked about post-prison, like right now, in dealing with his family and still trying to cope. Let's focus on the prison experience itself. It might be a little bit out of order, you know, before jail, during jail, after jail. We kind of did like before jail, after jail. Now let's do during the incarceration. And Ben, man, we really appreciate your openness.
No problem.
And your desire to be open.
None at all.
So as the fellows are forming them questions and this chat board is lighting up, Greg already kind of said it for me, you know, one of the saddest moments. What are some of the worst moments you saw in jail? Because the words you say now, ooh, as we talked earlier during our teacher's meeting, was that you may say something might help prevent some younger person from going. So in the real tradition of scared straight, what was the most horrendous thing you saw in prison?
I'm going to give it to you. Coming inside of the penitentiary. The penitentiary has a baseball field. Soon as I walk into the penitentiary, lifers are, I'm in a penitentiary with lifers. I'm a kid. Someone gets hit with a baseball bat. Two guys grab him at the same time while the guy hitting him with the baseball bat and starts stabbing him. I'm talking about blood flying everywhere. You don't see nothing but dust and blood. I'm so scared. This is my first experience. I'm so scared, I run. I take off. I don't know where I'm running to. I run into a building, run all the way up the stairwell. I get to the top of the stairwell. Lo and behold, I know where I'm at. I know where I was at afterwards, but I ended up on the street side facing Igor Street. I can see actually Igor Street in the penitentiary. They call it street side. I ran up there. So the guard stopped me like, what's wrong? Why you running? I'm like, nothing. I'm like, I'm trying to find my cell. I'm new. So I show him my paperwork. He get me to my cell. I was just so happy to be in that cell after seeing it. It was just like, I never seen anything like that in my life. I done seen people shot. Never seen no one stabbed. I mean, it was like one of the most violent acts I've ever seen in prison. That actual day that I entered prison.
Isn't that something? Remember how you said in your roots as a youngster, the violence that kind of permeated your mind? How do you kind of make that comparison between then as a little boy and then you go into the joint and you see this violent act? Did it, how deep did it hit you? How long did you tremble after that happened?
Not even a day. A guy came to me as we went to eat. My uncle was incarcerated. I met my uncle incarcerated in prison. So the guy comes to me and he pulls the knife out. The knife just about as big as me. He asks me, do I know my uncle? I tell him no. I back off. And I get so far away that I'm gone again. I go to my cell. My uncle comes to my cell and tells me, why didn't you take the knife? Like the guy could have been trying to kill you. I don't know the guy. When the guy come back, take the knife. The guy came back to my cell. That evening before we got let off a wreck and brought the knife back to me. From that day until, when did I come home? Until I got my GED. When I got my GED, I stopped carrying a knife in prison. October the 30th of 2000, I told myself that I was through with all of the prison stuff. I was trying to bring myself out. I had given some time back, and I was waiting for everything. You know, I went to school, did the GED, was waiting for the test. And then, like I say, he was God with this funny stuff. He just started lining everything up for me just before I came home. He lined everything up perfectly. And I executed. I came home, and I haven't looked back. I haven't.
Come on, Alicia. Do your thing with the chats.
Alrighty. So, Selena said, I am curious, at what age did you receive the life sentence? Also, at what age or time period in your life did your mindset and perspective on life start to change?
She was asking the ages. I told her 15 and 30. Just before I came home, I guess I was done with it, you know? I seen my life seen, I lost every friend, you know, it was just like, I wanted to try something different. So I got a notepad and I started writing down everything that I wanted to do different. And at the top, first thing that I said, my entire life has to change. My people, my places, and the things that I was doing. And a lot of people fail to realize with change, that's gonna happen and it has to happen if you wanna make positive change. You have to remove yourself away from the places that you used to hang, the people that you used to hang with and doing the things that you used to do. Because that's your number one leader to bringing you right back into where you were.
Okay. Alicia, what do you have on chat that talks a little bit more about the incarceration itself while he was in jail? Anybody asking any questions about that? Because we've gotten before and after. I'm just trying to make sure we cover all our bases. The clock is ticking on us.
Yeah, it's literally only three more questions, though, but they're all still good.
Okay.
And what one, the next one actually was about incarceration. It's from it's from Janelle. It's what was the one thing you missed most about your freedom when you were incarcerated?
The one thing that I miss right now, my mother. My mother lives in Florida. I packed my mom's entire house up by myself and moved her to Florida almost 2 years ago. That's the biggest thing. Missing my mom.
I'm sorry. Next question. What was it like to be confined, and did it take a toll on you mentally?
If anyone lies and tells you that it doesn't take a mental toll on you, then something is mentally wrong with them. Being confined to that small of a space for that much time, it will take anybody into another place, whether it be trying to make peace with where you're at for the time or just trying to escape. I mean, you're always trying to put yourself somewhere else instead of there. Always.
And the last question is, if you had a second chance in life, what would you do different?
The only thing that I would do different? Stay in school. I'd have furthered my education. I maintained an 85 average and didn't even go to school every day. I was exceptional with schooling, and I just took it for granted. Education, I would definitely, it would have took me into a whole nother place. I wouldn't have time to do with what I was doing. Education.
Was school boring?
Yes. It didn't challenge me. And I see a lot of the kids in school now today the same way I was. So I work in one of the most aggressive high schools that's seen in the public eye right now. So I know everybody who's from Baltimore, lives in Baltimore, can imagine what school that is. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge. You know, because I'm trying to keep these kids that I see myself in focused on other things outside of the streets, you know. It becomes very challenging, but it's a bigger challenge for me because I know that I can help them. And a lot of people can't mentor kids. A lot of people can't work around kids. Prison taught me patience. I got a lot of patience. And my kids say it all the time. How can you go up there and deal with somebody else's kid all day? I love it. I love doing it. Something that I learned to love to do.
What else you got, Alicia? Is that it?
We got one more that popped up.
Somebody's thinking.
Jakira asks, did you experience any racial issues in prison?
The only racial issues that were experienced were police on inmate issues. Okay. It was never really a inmate on inmate issue. I mean, most of the prisons that I were in, I never experienced it. Like I say, inmate on inmate, just guard on inmate. And like a lot of my last incarceration, it's funny. I had helped four Spanish guys learn how to speak English. One of them slept next to me, and he was the one that brought all of them here to America. They were from the Dominican Republic, San Domingo. And one of them even played minor league baseball, but none of them could speak English. They were railroaded. And the lawyer basically just took their money. They supposed to have 5 years. They ended up with 15 years. But the guards tried everything in their power to keep us out of the library from trying to help them give their time back. And it was just like, I had to go through other people just to get literature to help them give their time back. Most racial issues in prison come from guard on inmate in Maryland. But then, like, when you get out of town, stuff like that, then you see a lot more racial issues. You know? But here, we don't have a lot of it. But we've had it. Don't get me wrong. We do have Aryan Nation, DMI. They're like the white gangs. Then you have, like, MS-13, a couple other different gangs from, like, El Salvador. Then you got, like, homegrown gangs, the BGF, Bloods, but never really a whole lot of racial violence in prison.
How many institutions did you go to, Ben? Like, what, one in Maryland and then the other one were out of state? And was it federal time?
All my time was state, 1, 2, 3, 4. Mm-hmm. 5, 6 different facilities. Yeah, and all my time was state. I got questioned by the FBI at one time with my dealings with one of my partners, but it only fell on deaf ears. He was on a run and I was too, and I got locked up before him and they just questioned me about him, but never anything federal.
Wait, let's put this whole thing in synopsis. We talked for about an hour. Man, we got a lot of information. I'm personally very happy with what we got. Hey, what about you, Lucas? Is there anything you wanted to throw in there?
Nothing for me. I think we got some real good sound bites. I really appreciate you sharing your story. And I also really appreciate, as the editor, I appreciate you starting clean, you know, every sentence. It's going to be real easy to cut up, so. I appreciate it.
No problem. You're more than welcome.
Hey, Ben.
Yes.
I got your phone number. I'm going to call you because I'm trying to keep everybody that we talk to like in my back pocket on my phone, because eventually we're going to expand this thing. We're hoping for some just wonderful things to happen with this program. And I want to get back to you to let you know when we put stuff together so you can see yourself on tape.
Can't wait.
It's going to be a little while. Not no whole long time. Once we put everything together, I'm going to get back to you. Hey, is there any one last thing you want to say? Words of wisdom. You got the last word, bro.
To anybody who think that life stops, life never stops. Time never stops. Time keeps going. And once we realize that we have no control over anyone else's life and only our own, then we'll all be good. Because at the end of the day, you're only responsible for one person at the end of the day. That's yourself if you have no kids, you know. But, empathy. The world is missing empathy. And it's needed more in our community. And if it was left up to me, I would change the world with a click of a finger. But other than that, I could just show everybody a better outlook just looking through my eyes, you know. Like I always say, change is inevitable. It's going to happen. And if everybody can figure that out and get that in their head, it'll be a better place.
Oh, thank you, man. Any fellow, Selena, anybody want to just say anything? I'm wondering about Tyler, you know, who talked earlier, who said he just really had this interest. Tyler, are you still with us? Did you want to say anything to Mr. Ben as we leave?
Yeah, it's just God bless you, sir. It was great meeting you. Stuff
you
like
as
that.
Well.
And, my whole outlook on it was like I'm really interested in all this because these last couple of weeks, I always been like I'm just curious about a lot of stuff. So like, you know, hearing from your perspective, stuff like that, I'm very curious because, and that point you made about the military and just not like just being single minded about that. I felt that because, like, I'm going to use jail as an example. We're raised to believe that going to jail was always bad and everybody that's ever been in the jail system has done, it was automatically their fault, but you don't know the full story. So I think one of the biggest problems when it comes to the court system and the backlash is a lot of speaking on stuff you don't know about. And, like, I even see videos about this on YouTube where it's like people are in jail for stuff that they didn't even do. No proof, no nothing. So it's just like, again, if that were me in that situation, I don't think I could be like you where it's just like, I want to bounce back because like my thing in life is it's easy for me to take responsibility for stuff I know I did. But like, if it's something I know I didn't do and if everybody else knows I didn't do it, then why am I taking responsibility for something I had no part in? So like, I feel like with the jail system is very corrupt because you got people who are literally in there for something they didn't even do. And people expect you to just keep moving on and go on about it, but they don't know like the stigma and all of the, it scars people. Like no one wants to be sitting in jail for something that they didn't do. And knowing that it ruins potential job stuff, that it follows you your whole life, that's different. It's not like something you could just, it'll just, it's not like a one-time thing where like it'll just happen and going about your business. It follows you. Mm-hmm. Even when you die, it'll still be brought up.
Yep, you're so right. Valid points.
So, Ben, thank you again. I'll be in touch with you personally once we get all this done and get it on the website, and I'll be able to let you know.
I appreciate you.
Man, this was a great session, don't you think?
I have a question for Ben real quick.
Yeah.
Like, if all the past experience that you learned, like, with the court system and the judge, if the judge had given you, like, a second chance in life by saying, like, you know what, I want to, you know what, let's do something different, like, let's, like, community service, or, like, would you have, like, taken that chance and explore different options, like, your different talents that you have, explore talents that you don't have, that you don't know that you have?
I'm
like if you had a talent.
I'm going to keep it straight up with you. You know how many times I was given a break and didn't heed the warning signs? We all on our own rules in life. And God gives you free rein to use this for a reason. You know, we all don't use it in the right way at the right time, but it's there for you to use. I have one of the most beautiful minds that a person will want to see. I'm a very artistic. I've seen a lot of things in life, so it's just like, I had to go through everything that I went through just to be who I am right now today. She could have. They did. Like I say, they did on several occasions. But from 1988 until 2000, I wasn't on the streets an entire year. From 1988 until 2000, I've been home since 2001 when I came out of the halfway house. I've been home for 20 years. Wow. Wow. 20 years. And I wouldn't ask God to reverse any of it except my education. Because if I reversed my education, it would took me to a different path.
Like, the reason I asked this is because, like, I feel like growing up, like, in New York and, like, bad, like, being around, like, violence and stuff like that, because I had, like, some experience, like, about being in the streets, but then coming to Maryland, I made, like, bad friends and stuff like that, and right now I'm dealing with a bad situation, and it's, like, I'm trying to get myself out of it, and actually I took the time to, like, I travel out of the country to actually think, to know what I wanted to do in life. In doing so, it helped me open up to, like, different ideas that I want to follow. That's why I asked you that question.
Change. If you want something that bad, don't be afraid of the change. You know? We see things that we think that we can't obtain in life because they cost a lot of money. How do you think those people obtain it? They change something in their life to get it. We all got to change something if we want to do something and we want to see something different. We got to change something in ourselves always. Remove yourself away from those situations. Remove yourself away from those people. And remove yourself away from the things that you're used to doing. Once you start doing that, you can start working on yourself. Once you start working on yourself, write down everything that you want. Everything that you want. Make sure you write it down. Don't write it down once. Write it down more than once. Find a couple different books. Fill them up. You feel me? You want this? Yeah, write it down. You want that? Write it down. You want to do this? You want to go there? Anything that you can think of ever. And you can't physically see it at the time, write it down. Just watch how it all start coming to life for you.
Because, like, I feel like right now I'm given, like, a second chance. Like as I'm going through this issue right now, I feel like I'm given a second chance to actually, like, do what I want to do and focus. But it's just, like, I feel like it's just the environment that I'm in. I have to remove myself, but I know I have to work on. So that's why I got myself, like, a little side job, like, a job. Yeah. So I could do full-time. And then because my original goal is to, like, move out of state and go, like, go back to Florida. And then just live a brand new life, brand new everything. So that's how I'm working, because I feel like the environment that I'm in and the house that I'm in, it's not good for me reality, because it's affecting me, like, negativity, and I have, like, negative relationships here with my parents. It's not, like, going good. So I want to remove myself from this environment and maybe, like 6 months in advance, probably, like, come back and try to build a relationship with them. But at the same time, I feel like if I try to rebuild that relationship, I might just be going backwards instead of forward.
Is this Junior talking?
Yeah.
Hey, Junior. Nice meeting you. And let me just jump in here for a second. We were going to be done by now so we can discuss some stuff after class, but I think we need to continue because I'm liking the way the session is going. Ben, let me ask you.
Do you think
you could help Junior somehow and mentor him in whatever he's telling us now? If you all kind of communicated, maybe shared numbers.
Yes. You can give them my number.
Entertain that, Junior, speaking with Mr. Ben, from class, to help you with your situation.
I will. Thank you.
Would you?
Yeah, I will.
Okay. We have Ben's number. Ben, why don't y'all just exchange numbers right now? Junior, why don't you write down Mr. Ben's number? And if it's okay, Ben, can he call you?
Paper. Yeah.
Anybody, my phone.
Okay, you know what? Okay, I'm sorry. One thing, Mr. Ben just said anybody can call him.
Yes, I have my phone always open. Trust me.
Okay,
man, I love this because this goes beyond just teaching students. This is about life too.
Oh yeah,
and we all are here to help each other.
Oh yeah,
and then Ben and Junior kind of caught me because both of y'all mentioned Florida. I'm from Florida. I'm from Miami. And I was just wondering, Junior, what part of Florida were you talking about? And Ben, what part of Florida were you talking about?
I was talking about like moving to like Miami because I like right now I have like an opportunity to like do modeling, and mm-hmm. I'm doing modeling as we speak. But wow. I'm doing modeling in New York, but I'm also trying to do modeling in Miami. So I got like a couple of destinations, but I don't want like the bad environment that I'm in and the bad situation that I find myself in to affect me from making this.
Did you find a piece of paper, Junior?
Yeah, I found a piece of paper.
Ben, can you give him your number right now, if you don't mind? We're just going to like, we got till 12 o'clock and we'll explain what we're going to do later, but we'll chop up this whole interview next session. Let's finish this out right now because it's going very well. So, Junior, write down Ben's number. He's going to give it to you.
I'm ready.
443.
Everybody write his number down if you need to talk to Mr. Ben.
819-63-36. Can I repeat it to you one more time? Just to make sure.
Sure.
443-819-6336.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
And I put it in the chat for anybody else that wanted to write it down as well.
Okay. And I was just going to ask you, Alicia, are there like a couple of more questions left in chat? And we can end up this session on this great conversation. It's good that we're established in this. And just for the fellows to know, when we get together Tuesday, from 6 to 8 on this same link, we will first of all chop up the interview that we just had with Mr. Ben. Then we'll go into our interview for Tuesday. I'm liking the way this is going. This has been an excellent first session. So what you got as far as chats, Lisa?
We still have a couple of questions. It's three, actually.
Yes. Okay, can we do three in 10 minutes?
Duh, we gonna hope so.
Okay, we're gonna give it a shot, right?
All right, so here's the first one. It's from Jerry. He said, if you had talent back then, would you have pursued it, and that if state and judge would have dropped the charges?
I had talent.
Read that one more time for me, please.
Okay. If you had talent back then, would you have pursued it, and that if state and judge would have dropped the charges?
Had a talent since the day I was able to pick up a pencil. I like to draw. And as a kid, I was always entered into contests by teachers and all of that. And still to this day, I still love to, once in a while, my kids would ask me to draw a picture for them. I would do that. I mean, yeah, I mean, if it was more explored by myself, you know, and a judge would have picked up on it, yeah, I would have appreciated it if they would have cut me some slack. But at the time, the only slack I knew was from a rope. That was it.
Okay, what you got next, Alicia?
Next one is, what was something that you did that helped the time pass while you were in prison? Did you still do the same thing, like writing, reading, etc.?
Give me 1 second, man. That's my door.
While we got a quick second, all the fellows, I am so pleased with today. I'm sure Greg, Lucas, and Alicia are too, but you got to do this. Next time we talk, starting Tuesday, everybody have a pad and a pen or a pencil. So you can write down key things that everything our guest says, so you can come back to it once we chop up the interview after we talk to the person. Because you can't remember all this stuff. It's impossible. But we do have transcripts that Lucas will hook us with. We'll go through that, and we'll go through these notes that I'm taking on everything being said. But those are your tools for the class, even though we're online. Bring your pad and pencil. So as like we're talking to Mr. Ben today, he said this that really stood out. And he said that that really stood out. And then we come back and chop it up later, and it helps the process go faster. Okay. You're back, Ben. Go ahead, my brother.
Where was I interrupted at? I couldn't even.
I'm talking about helping pass the time in prison.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a lot of my last incarceration, I did a lot of self-help stuff, you know, trying to get myself back together, like I say. Schooling, like you say, writing, you know, and I volunteered a lot. I did a lot of volunteer work as well, you know, like cleaning up, you know, just to get out, you know, things just to get out.
Okay.
Okay, and this is the last one. It's from Shannon. She said, what's your outlook in life? Before you went into prison, what was your goals in life? And if you would go back in time, what would you fix about yourself?
Before we go on, excuse me, Ben. Maybe, who's that, Shannon, did you say?
Shannon.
Okay. They might have come in late because I think Mr. Ben already answered maybe one or two of those questions, mm-hmm. like before, and like, what's he doing now? But what was the last part of that question we may not have discussed
there, yeah, Alicia? Say, he didn't answer. If you would go back in time, what would you fix about yourself?
Okay.
Education. I did answer. Mm-hmm. I would have pursued my education. Because if I would have pursued my education, it would have took me into a whole nother place. I wouldn't have been in the situations that I was in if I'd have furthered my education.
So was there any part of that question? You want to ask it again for us, Alicia?
No.
That he may not have answered.
No, it's actually a repeated question. She did come in late, but I had a new question. Just this is my last question. Just what advice would you give your younger self at the age that you are now?
Advice I would give my younger self. Everyone's not your friend. That's it. No more. Yeah. And if they can grasp that, they realize everybody is not for you. That's it.